Welcome to Warnounds of Renown. This is your host Chris speaking, and today we have a UKIS edition of the podcast. And we've got two of the current hosts of the UKIS podcast. We've got James White and John Barry Williams will be presenting two casters for us today. So if you're not familiar with the Warnounds of Renown podcast, I apologize, we've had a bit of a break. So if you want to familiarize yourself with the way that the caster review works, is we take on two casters. We go through the caster themselves. We rate them on categories, which you can see on the wmhukiss.co.uk/WOR website. So if you load that up and you want to have a read along as we go through, they also then recommend their favorite list, favorite theme, so you can get started with the caster yourself. Also, if you want to see any of the previous casters we've done, they're all on the website as well. So without further ado, I will pass it over to Barry to introduce his selection of casters that he wanted to review. So Barry, take it away.
Yay, I have chosen Beth Maddox, who is the Tignar Battlebox caster. She's in my opinion boring but functional, but we'll get on to that later. She is a Tignar Storm Knight Warcaster, which means she activates all sorts of special bits and bobs, and she benefits from some other stuff, again going into that later. But she's mat 7 rat 6. She's got a range 10 gun with power 12. It's electrically typed and it's got crit disruption, and then she's got Tempest, which is just a range 2 sword, power and strength 13. That's magical, and it does critical cortex damage, and she also has quick work, so if she kills something in melee she can then shoot something. Her spell list is Assail, which gives plus 2 to movement and free slams, tramples, or charges for warjacks. Dauntless Resolve, which is plus 3 armor and tough for a friendly faction warrior model slash unit. Electrical Blast, which is a range 8, power 13, AoE 3, electrically typed thing. And if it damages a warjack, they get disrupted. She has Onslaught, which is the spellcast from friendly faction models beginning their activations in a control range, getting Relentless Charge, where they get Pathfinder on the charge. And then the last spell is Snipe, which is just plus 4 to a model slash unit's ranged weapons. And then her feat, Thundering Rage. She, while in a control range, friendly faction models' melee weapons gain plus 3 power and beatback. And that lasts for a turn. So the first category is the primary win condition, which I have I put down as attrition, because that's sort of her feat centered around doing it, and that's like her main goal, really. She doesn't assassinate things. She's not very good at that. And she doesn't really... she can play the scenario game. I don't think she's bad at playing the scenario game. But I think attrition is sort of her main avenue to victory.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything in her art that she brings for scenario that wouldn't be taken by any signal caster. So, you know, for example... Sons of the Tempest list with all the pushbacks and things like that. Any single caster can do that. So what she's bringing to the table, everything on her list there is, you know, survival and getting that alpha for attrition, isn't it? So
exactly, yeah. As for losing, I've played a good few, like 70 to 100 games with Maddox, and it's almost always assassination, because she just has to. She has to be. She's focus 6, so her control range is 12 up to 14 if you have the Squire. But because the feat is if your model is in her control range, you have to bring her forward because your models have to be forward. So she ends up having to be a little too close to the flight, and normally she'll either get taken out by a bunch of guns or just something coming a little too close to her and sort of sneezing at her, because she doesn't have the best defensive stats in the world.
So what are your thoughts, James? Are you in agreement with this primary win and primary loss? Have you played against Maddox much?
Yeah, I've played a few games. I agree that I think that, like, she wins a lot through attrition because she does very good things for infantry, you know, in Signar, especially Pathfinder, because that's something they really struggle with. And loss-wise, yeah, she you often see her, like flapping in the wind a little bit. Like, sometimes she spends a bit too much trying to do too much, and that's when she gets done. I think that sound right.
Yeah, it sounds right to me.
Fair enough. I must admit, I think I've only seen her sort of once or twice, and I believe my only thought there is that will people tend to circumvent her army? Because from what I recall of the games that I've played, is because she's such a like an alpha focus that you tend to have to look, you have to go after her army, because normally turn two you've got, you know, 10 storm lancers and a unit in your face. So is normally the way that people will just, they'll just ignore the army and go straight for her, is that how it tends to fall out, as opposed to they destroy the army and then she's kind of sat there, you know, as you said, in the wind and then dies?
Yeah, it's sort of yeah, she comes up to feet on the army, and then the army, like, you either don't get as good an alpha as you need, or she's just sat, like, just a little too far out, and she's not screened by anything, because all your infantry's going for the melee attacks. So she stood there on her own with no no sort of defensive tech, and she'll just get, like, shot by a couple of stuff, and then something will trample over your small infantry and come in and just do the rest herself.
You really don't want to see lists that stop you doing what she wants to do. You don't want to see time warps. You don't want to see stuff that says you're not going to get your charge off this turn. You have to wait another turn, and you're going to have to contest all these scenario pieces.
Fair enough. Okay, well, in that case, we'll track that down. So we're going for her primary win is attrition, and her primary loss is assassination. So next category is personal involvement. Where did you land on this one?
I landed on force multiplier. She does stand just outside the kill box, like just inching out of it, and throws a boss around. I mean, snipe on things like the Stormstrider, or even like just Stormblades and other random like things that have got short range guns. Suddenly makes them a lot better. And she just like Dauntless Resolve to an infantry unit, maybe the horses, maybe some of the like Signal Foot infantry. So she basically, she's a buff, but she passes them all out turn one and then stands behind a rock trying not to die.
Yeah, I was having a look at the stats there, and you know, that thought of the charge and the on her feet, the power 16, but even then it's only power 16. There's no weapon master or anything like that to it.
No, so it's always very tempting to on her feet turn go, I can totally charge that heavy jack and kill it. And then you realize it's either going to take too much focus to do so, or it's going to put her so far forwards that she's just going to get, like, the retaliation is just going to be directed straight at her. I think the absolute limit of her feat and her personal threat I've had was to kill one of the Circle Warp Wolves. I think it was a Feral. And that's probably about the limit. And they're quite squishy when you can hit them. So she's not as much of a melee threat as you might think she is.
Yeah, and so in agreement there, James? Seems quite easy, this one, to be fair.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely do agree.
Yeah, I think that's the thing with the Battlebox casters, is I'm not sure amongst the Battlebox casters if there is a real, you know, bruiser in there. They all tend to be the, you know, teach you how to work with the army, work with the jacks that you get in the force, and go from there. So, I mean, if someone got Butcher in the Battlebox, I'm pretty sure that we would have heard about it by now.
Yeah, and I think the main issue with that is when you've got such a small game, if you've got a caster that can take out a heavy, then you've probably got a problem, because you're essentially playing, you know, in such small points games, it's difficult to punish that.
True. Right, so on to her feet.
Her feet, just what was it, plus three pound and beat back on models' melee weapons. Which has all sorts of bizarre connotations, I guess. Things like impact attacks gain that buff because they are they're melee weapons.
Yeah, and it's power, not strength, isn't it?
So. Yeah, it's +3 power, not the strength, so it gets a little weird. You can't use it to buff throws and other power attacks, but you can use it for bizarre things like horse mount attacks and impact attacks.
Do the impact attacks gain beatback?
Yes, they would. Which has never come up for me. It's never struck me as a thing to do, but now I might try it. Yeah, and the beatback is I've always found it's really circumstantial. It doesn't actually come into play that often. It usually ends up just being like a byproduct. You can never really use it to like the dream is you go, oh, and charge in on something and beat it back, and then you're in melee range of the caster and you buy all the rest of your attacks in there. But it doesn't actually come off that often, because usually people see it coming.
But I mean, for instance, you could clear everything in a zone with the higher power, and then you haven't got enough attacks to get the last jack out of the zone, but you could beat back it out of the zone.
You could use
it to get ahead on scenario, or even get a quick scenario win if the player's been playing too cautious.
Yeah, yeah, that's it's a little trick that you can use it for, yeah.
So to bring this back in, now obviously of the types, this is an offensive through and through. There's no defensive or control aspect of this, except possibly the beat back out of a zone.
Maybe? No, that's just utility.
It's utility. Secondary, if it's anything, yeah.
Yeah. So what would you grade this then as a purely offensive feat out there? What, I mean, what other offensive feats are out there? Does this stack up against them? Is this good in Signar?
It's okay. I don't think it's superstar. Like, it's not. It's certainly not top level. Like, we do have some infantry that could use the extra like damage on the hit, but I don't think it's superstar. So I'd probably put it around like a top level C.
Yeah, I see. I probably would have, around the time that she came out, I would have been maybe arguing for a B, because with things like Stormlancers and with other casters, you were sort of topping out with like positive charge, possibly with the plus two, so that was really your biggest damage buff. But since then, you've got Siege 2, who technically has Fury, which is the same power. The beat back part of it, again, as we said, is a bit hit or miss anyway, and I suppose you've got the power on the mount attacks. But if your main part of your force is too large, Stormlance box, he can technically do this exactly the same thing by hard swapping it across, and then has a feat on top of that.
So
I kind of feel like that, because there's literally the only thing that makes this difference to Fury is that it affects everything, but sometimes it's can you get everything to go off all at once? And if you only end up getting maybe one or two units in because of the way your opponents tend to play, is that any better than just Fury, which is just a spell? So I'm in agreement. The C feels right here. It's not completely useless. It definitely will see play and be used every game. It's not one of the. It's not a troll feat. I'm sorry, an old school troll feat.
I was gonna say we're gonna see a hell of a troll feat.
I keep forgetting that they've woken up in Mark III and start giving them good feats now. But yeah, the old school troll feat where it was like everyone gets cover and you kind of go, awesome. I'm fighting a melee army. This isn't going to work, but no, this definitely will see work. But I kind of feel that it is kind of just like a spell level effect that just goes on a bunch of things.
See, the thing I would say is that Signar, now that Nemo's been toned down a bit, probably don't have an A level offensive feat in the whole faction. Like, and the best ones would be like a high B, and I'd give them to like Nemo now and Striker to, I think probably the two best offensive feats in the faction, unless I'm missing one.
Siege 2? Siege 1?
I've got to say,
armor piercing to every attack.
But it's not.
It's only one. It's the first
it's the
attack.
First attack.
Yeah.
It's the first attack, but depending on the army, that's sometimes all you need.
True.
I mean, there was always a big joke that people thought it was Siege 1 was an armor cracker, and he's absolutely the opposite. Like, he doesn't crack armor very well, even though he's got a feat that gives armor piercing, and everyone used him as more of a assassination caster.
Mm.
But anyway, so to rein you back in.
See, sorry,
it's a hard job as a host with these two, especially on the other cast. Are we going for offensive C? Are we happy with that?
Yeah,
I'm happy with that.
Cool. Right. So on to spells. So key spells. Now, the reason why I put key spells in this category is that if you find that you only cast two of the spells every game because the rest are crap, then we don't need to judge them. So it's just the key spell she has and then the grade. So what type of spells does she have?
I think Onslaught is I'm going to say speed / threat projection because it's pathfinder to everything. Maybe it's more toolboxy. But Onslaught, giving everything pathfinder, like James was saying earlier, is a real problem in Signar. We just don't have a great deal of access to it, and it becomes a problem when you've got like the things like Storm Blades and Storm Guards that really never see the table, but they're only speed 5, so they're only threatening 9 inches on charges. And that's like, if you've suddenly got a wall or a a forest or even just like a pool of water in front of them, they just become really sad because they can't get anywhere. So Onslaught's like a big, it's a big benefit I found in Signar. And then Dauntless Resolve is for warrior models, because of the tough, just better than a journeyman. Especially if you put on things like Storm Lances, that's really good, and Storm Storm Blades. Some of the like the more elite Signar infantry really benefit from it because of the plus three armor and the tough. Yeah.
It some is of the less... only faction warrior model unit though.
It's it can't go everywhere, so you can't put it on a warjack. Just a little worse than Arcane Shield, but a little better in other ways. And then Assail's really good because Signar Jacks, like, their melee threat range isn't actually that great. It's what, speed 5, charge 8, 9. It's 9 inches on an ironclad up to 11 with Assail, and 11 inches is just way better than 9. Or even if you've got a stormclad that's going 12 inches with Assail, which is just, again, it's like a huge difference between 10 and 12 in terms of threat. And then Snipe's really good because, you know, the faction with lots of good guns, Snipe just makes them better.
So, I mean, I'm having a look through the options we've got here. So we've got things like Offensive Army Burst, Defensive, Board Control, Speed Threat Progression, Scenario, and Toolbox. Now, normally when we have a caster that's got quite a lot of different spells, I would say, you know, Toolbox would be the place to go. But I kind of feel that she is really... that the core of her spell list is about speed and threat projection, because you've got Assail, you've got Onslaught, which maintains that speed, you know, because if they've got Pathfinder, that can sometimes cripple Alpha armies. And then the Snipe is the ranged threat extension as well. And as much as Dauntless Resolve is there as well for a defensive buff, it's... I understand what you're saying about the tough, but it's something that all Signar casters generally have anyway, is that plus three. I mean, obviously, she can put it on a second unit, but so can things like Stryker and Haley. So that's not really the, you know, is that what you take her for?
Yeah.
So would you say she's probably, her main thing that differentiates her from Signar casters is the fact that she, in three separate ways, extends the threat projection of the army?
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment, especially with the melee-oriented feat. I mean, it'd be kind of rubbish if she didn't do that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So what are your thoughts, James? Is that, do you agree, or do you think she is more sort of toolboxy in the choices that she has, or?
No, I think you summed it up. I think you can have a spell list that does lots of different things and is toolboxy, but if it all does the same kind of thing, then I think it actually leads to quite a focused skill set.
Yeah. Where would you rate it then, James? Before we hear where Barry's thrown it, what would you say of that spell list? Is that a good speed threat protection spell list?
Yes.
Yeah. Are you all the way up in the A's, or are you still around B?
The problem is that, like, it doesn't bring up it doesn't make them like high threat. There are threats. Projection armies out there that can threat 15, 17 inches in some cases. And it's not one of those. It's not high threat for the game. It's high threat for Signar infantry.
Yeah.
And Signar are better at shooting in a lot of situations. So you're shoring up a weakness in the faction rather than like playing to your strengths.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go for a B. And my reasoning behind that is I do agree it is a good threat projection spell list. But for me, what makes it not quite the A is that it has Snipe, which is one model, and it has Assail, which is one model. And although Onslaught does affect the whole army, it's not like, I'm trying to think of some good casters, you know, like, is it Sloan who has is it Cray, everything boosted?
Yeah, that's Sloan. Sloan with Guided Fire.
Sloan, yeah, so Guided Fire or
fire group.
One where you get the Fire Group for the plus two. You know, where it's like, them to me would be, if she had similar, where it was like Fire Group instead of Snipe, and then she had something that was like plus whatever to charges instead of Assail, that would be for me.
Almost like Crusader's Call or something.
Yeah, you know, like an army-wide threat projector, I think, would make her the A, but it's not that these are bad and Snipe, sniping the wrong force can end games very quickly, but I just kind of feel that she's like just teetering out of that multiple models being affected to make it that true sort of A spell list on threat projection.
Yeah, I agree. I think B is a very fair place to put it.
Fair enough. Okay, so we'll go for threat projection and B. So on to the next category, we have army focus. So does she run infantry horde, elite infantry, beast brick, or more of a balanced army type?
When I was playing with all the storm lances and storm blades. So I did probably the elite infantry end of Signar, rather than the cheaper stuff. Like sword knights and trenches are probably the infantry horde level for Signar. Whereas storm nouns are more like the elite infantry end.
Yeah, the higher, the more the quality than the numbers kind of thing. So, and yeah, as you said, the whole point of this is to make the quality troops better.
Yeah. So things like the storm blades have the mini feet that don't that stop them being knocked down or made stationary, and then when you combine that with the tough from Dauntless Resolve and they get +3 armor, no knockdown and no stationary, and then they also get +3 armor from Dauntless and then tough, so you get no knockdown tough and a +6 armor swing. So they go up to armor 21, which makes them actually quite difficult to deal with sometimes. And then, I mean, Dauntless Resolve on Storm Lances is good as well, because they go to armor 20, and there's 5 of them, and they all get tough. So it's quite the, I think it's just a bit of like a, here's a roadblock, good luck trying to deal with it sort of thing, rather than just here's a horde of dudes, try and deal with them. I definitely think she prefers the elite infantry level.
Yeah, definitely. And on that, I kind of feel we've already done this one. But what do you think her favorite theme is?
I personally really like Storm Division with her. I mean, she's a Storm Knight herself, so she can do things like she can trigger the accumulator on Stormclads, which again, you don't need to be in Storm Division 4, but they do like Storm Division a lot. But then she also benefits from things like the Stormblade Captain, so she gets the tactician to move through her own army. Which can be like, if you need her in a certain place for the feet, but you need to feet before you move all your other stuff, you can get her there because of the tactician thing.
That's clutch.
Yeah. So I think Storm Division. I could see there is some, like in my mind, there is some level of thinking, oh, Gravediggers might work because trenches get the, snipe on trencher long gunners is just really good. And then the feet helps the trenches actually do some damage in melee. When the time comes, but there's a little part of me that's just like, Dauntless Resolve +3 armor for trenches isn't great because they're I think they're 13 base, so up to 16 isn't that much of a jump. And like a sail, maybe on one of the heavies in a battle group. So perhaps Gravediggers, but I don't think Gravediggers benefits as much as Storm Division does.
No. So go on then for the listeners. What is your recommended list if they were sort of like, right, I want to try out Maddox, or if they've just started and they want to know what to buy to go with Maddox, what is the list that you would recommend they start with?
Okay, so Maddox herself, obviously, and then a Squire, as most Signar lists have. And then for her battle group, I have a Stormclad and an Ironclad, because that rounds out our battle group points quite nicely. So that's exactly 30 points, and the Stormclad benefits from the accumulator. And then I have a Stormstrider, because when you put snipe on that thing, it becomes terrifying. Range 18, speed 5, 23 inches of all the guns. It's just pretty silly. And then a Stormblade Captain for tactician, so sorting out moving through your own stuff. And then I have 2 units of Storm Lances, because they like both her feet and they like Dauntless Resolve. And then a full unit of Stormblades with the UA and 3 of the Storm Gunners. And the Storm Gunners are range 10 up to 12 with the leader of the Stormblade unit, because they have all the complicated rules. And then an extra 4 from snipe on those guys is really good for 16-inch threat range on 3 of the guns. And also you can get 8 inches of threat up to 8, 9, 10 inches of threat with the, they're called glaive bolts, which is the sword that shoots. And then the UA gives them assault, so you can either create some like unexpected ranged attacks from the assault shots. But then also with the Storm Gunners, you get, if they hit, the rest of the unit automatically hits. So you can like if you're assaulting a long distance, you can get the Storm Gunners. If they can hit, then the rest of your assault shots will hit anyway, which gets around their route 5 problem a little bit. And then that is the entire list.
Nice. And what would be your top tip for the person putting that on the table for the first time?
The Stormblade mini feat plus Dauntless Resolve is like it's to deliver them. It's not to make them stay in the fight. It's to get them to the fight. Because again, they don't threat very far. And yeah, snipe on a Stormstrider is just silly.
And there you have it. Okay, so just the final two rankings there. So we have, where would you put her within the faction? So it's not as a total in the game, as in that faction. Is she faction defining, first team, bench, or snowflake?
She's definitely not faction defining, and I don't think she's first team. I would put her somewhere probably bench. I'm reluctant to go as low as snowflake, because I think she does some of the things that the Signar need, like the armor breaking feat, and then her spell list makes some stuff really good. So I'm really reluctant to put her at snowflake. So I put her probably in bench, but maybe the middle end of bench, maybe even the lower end of bench.
What are your thoughts, James? Where would you put her?
Absolutely bench. There's so many casters in Signar that get the snowflake title ahead of her. You know, some of the Nemos, Cassie.
Constance Blaze,
that's the one. Yes, can't talk. Yeah, Constance Blaze, there's so many casters that go there ahead of her. She's not faction defining. Signar are one of the ones that have the most faction defining casters, I feel, like most solid case for. She's not really first team. We see a lot of stuff like Striker 1, etc., or Nemo 3 getting played, but definitely bench.
Yeah, I must admit I'm in the bench, and the reason, like you were saying with the Snowflake, is normally the way we've rated Snowflake is that they're outclassed in what they do by other casters in the faction. So what her thing is, you can easily replicate elsewhere and do better. And as we were discussing before, although there's kind of some similarities with other casters, what she actually does, I don't think many other Signar casters do. So therefore, you know, it might be, even if it's not the current meta, there may be a meta out there where she is, you know, that silver bullet that Signar need. And so, yeah, that's fine. I'd see her on the bench. And then for the floor and ceiling, what would you put for the floor? So how easy is she to learn and how powerful does she become?
I put the floor quite low. She is a battle box caster, so I mean, it kind of has to be. But also, like, it's really obvious where you put the buffs in the faction, because we've got, like, you can see, oh, like, these models want that buff really, like, really obviously, and these models want that buff really obviously. So it's very easy to, you pick her up and you go, oh, if I put that on that, it's really good, and it's just immediately obvious. So I'd say, yeah, low floor. As for ceiling, I don't think she becomes incredibly powerful. I think she definitely becomes like, I'd put the ceiling as medium in my notes here. So yeah, I don't think there's like, she's never gonna be like the terrorizer that sort of Haley 2, Haley 3 and Nemo, those sorts of levels. I don't think she's ever gonna be that strong.
And you don't think there's sort of that much more to become like a master of Maddox?
No, I think after the first sort of 30, 40 games, you've pretty much got all there is to it. Maybe there's a little bit of nuance, but not like nothing that will suddenly jump out to you at game 50 and you'd be like, oh, I can do this. I don't think there's any of that to be had.
Okay, James, are you in agreement with that? She's a low medium?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, if we put a low for a battle box caster, we'd probably have to write a letter to PP and ask what's going on.
Yeah.
Tanner.
We can't figure out. Wow, yeah, that's a good point. That'll be an interesting episode when we get to her.
Bloody Tanner.
Right then, so guys, that is the halfway mark. We've just covered Maddox for you, so I know you're all chomping at the bit to go out and play her. So before you do that, though, we have James here to talk about just, I mean, she's not that good, so you don't really need to pay attention too much, but I mean, there's Cole Grimmer for trolls if you're that interested.
The Maddox half is clearly more interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. The better caster of the two, clearly.
You know,
absolutely.
Everyone should play Maddox. No one should ever play Cole Grimmer, that's all I'm saying. Heard it on Chain Attack, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Right. Cole Grimmer without the assassination threat, you mean? Yeah.
Exactly. Okay, so we start right back at the top then. So what have you found to be her primary win condition?
So, like, I think it's pretty clear that the first thing that jumps out when you read her card and you really understand it is assassination. And she has a very good assassination. I'll say to you that you'll probably only go for it if you can't win another way. And she is so strong that she pushes people out of scenario when they're not expecting it. And she clears zones, like, without killing a lot of stuff. She'll, you know, quite often take a 3-0 lead or something like that in a scenario because her feet pushes stuff out of the scenario and they're sitting back because of the cloud wall. And then suddenly, you know, they have to, they're scrambled to contest the zone and you just push stuff out, you just kill stuff, and then suddenly you've won on scenario. And she is phenomenal at attrition. So to me, she's everything. She's probably the least good at scenario, but she still, I still win a lot of games on like turn three scenario.
Yeah, she said, just from that, because I was thinking Heirich, because although, you know, she's not straight up there with the, you know, the TK kind of casters, the fact that you can, you know, push the army out of the zone if they're just turning the zone, get those points like you mentioned, and then maybe only have to kill one or two models.
Yeah.
Or then just win because your opponent has to just completely give their army away to stop you from winning on scenario straight away anyway. So, yeah, I definitely agree. She sounds very much like a hybrid caster that she can, you know, she's constantly juggling between which way she wants to win.
Yeah.
Through
it. And your opponent has to walk the line before giving their whole army away to a, you know, to a strong army that's sitting behind a cloud wall, or giving you scenario. So it all plays, it all works together beautifully.
Yeah. And what are your thoughts, Barry?
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think, like, I've played against Kogrimma several times, and that's just like on the nose, really, for what she does.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so yeah, that's fine. Hybrid sounds perfect for her. And primary loss condition, how have you lost? And how have you ever lost? Because that's the question for me.
I have lost. A lot of the losses come from... the attrition's gone badly, so you go all in with a good assassination and the dice don't quite fall right. It's very hard to assassinate her unless she goes all in, because she can make herself immune to spells every single turn. So not immune to spells, that can't be targeted by spells, with Owl's Wisdom, which makes her very hard to get at a lot of the time. And she's got Vanish, so she sits further back than normal. But a lot of the times you'll sit there and you go, the attrition on the scenario is not quite going my way, I'm going to go all in. And then it fails and you're just flapping in the wind and you get killed. So I don't know if that is more of an attrition loss or an assassination loss.
I kind of feel like it's more of attrition, because I mean, she doesn't have, although she's, you know, she's got things like, I mean, you'll go into this, I'll imagine, with the list makeup and stuff like that, but the fact that she can make, it's not just herself, is it? It's without wisdom, it's anything she can put a command on, or friendly faction model. So if you've got, say, you know, the unable to be pushed models, like, you know, the fact that Earth's Blessing is everywhere, and the fact that if you've got this one model in a key scenario that you can Earth's Blessing and then Owl's Wisdom, which means there's just, you can't even TK them out.
Yeah.
Means that I'd imagine that scenario wise it would be, and the fact that her feet is also pushing you back the other way, means that I can't see her, you know, just flat out losing to scenario. I would imagine they'd always have to, and this is probably the same against every troll army, they'd have to just grind through that army to get it away. And then, as you said, that forces your hand, which may get her killed, or you might lose on scenario, but it tends to be because the army's just not there anymore.
Yeah, absolutely.
Are you in agreement, Barry?
Yeah, I think I've definitely seen it where she's like most of 90% of the army's gone and it's her and a couple of other bits, and then yeah, she goes in on the assassination, doesn't make it, and then gets counter assassinated.
Fair enough. Okay, so she's just sounding good so far. But as I said, people, she's awful, no, never play it. So personal involvement, this one sounds quite interesting here. So what have you put for personal involvement?
Well, I mean, if we go down the categories, the ones that I think apply to her, Force Multiplier, she brings the Cloud Wall, she brings Hunter's Mark, which, you know, are both brilliant for helping the Force. She throws her spray out a lot of the time to unjam your troops. So often, you'll just spray your own troops and kill the models that are in melee with them, and then you can start charging stuff. And just the ability to unjam whatever you want in your army, he's a massive force multiplier, if that makes sense. She doesn't have a gun. She's not a ranged assassin. She's not very good in melee, although she often ends up in melee just because I want to use Dispel on a melee weapon. her armies are hard to kill. Like, for instance, I like taking huge bases with her, and you give them Alan's Wisdom instead of your caster, and suddenly someone's trying to kill an armor 21 troll gargantuan, and they can't despell it. And some armies just can't do that, if that makes sense. Yeah. And the Cloud War's pretty defensive as well. And she throws sprays out as well. And I'm saying a lot of things here, and you're sitting there thinking, she hasn't got a lot of focus, but part of what makes Colgrimmar so much fun is that she has so many options on how she can spend a fury every single turn. And there's never usually a wrong answer. It's just different degrees of right answers.
Plus because she has one more now with the new Moses buff.
Yeah, exactly. It's just every she can do. I would say she's hybrid because she's hugely flexible.
Yeah.
And whether that's one, whether this turn requires you to defend stuff, whether you need to do work and kill infantry, whether you need to debuff with Cursed Fate so that a unit can be killed by the rest of your army, she does it all.
Yeah, I mean, I was reading through that, and the only thing that she doesn't do from that list is technically melee bruiser and ranged assassin.
Spot on.
But what the other things that she does are just, you know, brilliant. She's got the offensive buff, she's got defensive buff, she's got, you know, denial in the way of the Cloud Wall. Yeah, there's a lot there. And that Cloud Wall is strange in a way, because a lot of people see the Cloud Wall as, what's it called? Just, you know, not being able to do line of sight. But one of the things that I used to always see it get used for was you would place it in a certain spot where something like a gargantuan or a heavy or something like that, the only place that they could reach your model would be to stand touching that cloud.
Yep.
Yeah. That is just a minus two to their attack rolls.
Yep.
Which people don't consider, strangely enough. I mean, I've been caught out by it as well. You just go, oh, it's a cloud.
I've been caught by that several times.
I even used it in a game a couple of weeks ago where a model had defensive strike. And so I put a cloud on the center of the model. And then when my unit charged in, he missed all the defensive strikes because he had minus two to attack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one cloud, which means that the rest of the spells she's got, she can, you know, start using sprays as well and things like that. So yeah, definitely hybrid. She gets involved. I don't think there's probably ever a turn that you're not doing something with her anyway.
There's always something she can do. And I think a lot of people think that she's just a Cloud Wall caster, and they think if they can beat the Cloud Wall, then they've beaten her. But actually, you'll find that, like, you don't throw clouds down that often because she can be doing so much better. Like, she can spray a heavy to death. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes that's a better choice.
I was going to say, we did unfortunately skip the bit where we reviewed the card. So when people look at the Power 12 spray, why is it that Power 12 spray can take heavies off? Because there's an important part of the card.
Yeah, she's got Dark Power, which is essentially signs importance. You roll three dice for attack and damage rolls, and then you take away the lowest. She also can go with the Cold Stone, which is the new stone for the Northkin theme, which means that she gets plus two damage on cold damage attacks, which means she's a Power 14, signs importance spray.
Yeah, and sprays are even more important in this day and age in Mark III in compared to 2, because they're one of the few things that gets around things like shield guards, which are there's a lot more shield guards out there now in things like theme bosses as well. So,
absolutely. And it's got crit stationary on it, which when you're taking away the lowest dice can be pretty good.
Yeah. Definitely. I'm down there with the hybrid. Happy with that one. So feat type. So do you want to just give a readout of the feat for people, James?
Absolutely. So there's quite a lot going on here, so bear with me. Enemy models currently in Colgrimmar's control range lose Isle of Sight, Flight, and Pathfinder, and cannot make ranged attacks for one round. Additionally, enemy models in Colgrimmar's control range are pushed 2 inches directly away from Colgrimmar in the order you choose.
Now, just before we go too much into that as well, part of the Troll CID did change Moses, I believe, to give him plus 2 inches on his control.
Yeah, she's every time I've used the feat, it's been a 16-inch bubble.
Which, the reason why we mention that is because Gorton, we always admit, has probably the best feet in the game, but the fact that it's only 10 inches is the limiting factor. This is 16-inch bubble from her, which is quite
important. Can I give you another part of it as well, which people overlook? She's got the spell Vanish, which is a 3-inch teleport, so she often goes further forward than you'd like her to go, and then teleports back after she's feated.
Yeah, that's a good point, because it is a pulse, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's a pulse, which means you can get her back to safety. You can even vanish forwards, feet, and then walk backwards. Yeah, if you really want to stay safe. And remember that no one in the 16 inches is going to be able to make range attacks either next turn, and you won't be targetable by spells if you want Owl's Wisdom on yourself. So the only way they're going to get you is after being pushed, they have to get something to melee with you. So she's incredibly safe on the feet.
I mean, this one, just going back to the rating, I mean, this is in every way what you'd imagine
control
feet to be.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, or control, as we like to call it.
Oh, dear.
She puts the troll in control.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, in every way, that cripples virtually every type of army that you can think of, because if you've got your ranged attack army, they just can't shoot. It's not a, you know, one less dice, you know, plus armor against it. It's just a no shooting. You've got your flight, which is normally flight and pathfinder, which are the ways to get around terrain, which again, that just goes. Eyeless sight is normally the way that certain armies get around the clouds and things like that. Again, that goes. And then if you're a melee army, an incorporeal, I know, because that one works, sorry, incorporeal, but the only way that melee armies get around it is incorporeal, because they can't be pushed. That's it. Like, every other melee army is now 2 inches further away than they were, and they've lost their pathfinder.
Yes, so just... and I mean, there are some things to note here. You can regain pathfinder, so stuff like relentless charge gets around it, stuff where you give pathfinder from people gets around it.
Rupert Carvalho, things like that.
Yeah, cricks almost entirely ignore it with their ghostly rubbish.
But they still get pushed.
Yes, I've played against some lists that don't get pushed. It's not... What I'm trying to say is, I love it. I think it's a brilliant feat. I don't think it's an A. I would put it as a high B, purely because I think there are better control feats out there. There are some times when it doesn't... I've used it in the past to push one model off a flag because everything else couldn't be pushed. So I just pushed his solo off a flag so he couldn't score that turn.
So, I mean, obviously, you know, being the person that's played her a lot, I would err with you on this one, but I was straight in the A category with this. Straight in the A category.
I too was leaning towards the A category.
Okay, I'm happy. Maybe I'm just being too critical.
Yeah, I think to give my thoughts behind it and see if you agree is that yes, cricks, you know, have ways around it. There are ways of re-giving the Pathfinder and stuff like that, but that's one faction out of 14 and a couple of, you know, abilities dotted about here and there, and even then. It still gets rid of things like Eyeless Sight and still has, you know, the ranged attack element of it is just gone. That just stops everyone.
Yeah. You know, that's so true. Okay.
It does feel like if you were splitting up into the you know, the top feats, stuff that just completely stops it, there's no umming and ahhing around it. I kind of feel it has to be up in that top.
Okay. I mean, it is your rating system. Are we working off a bell curve, or are we working off, you know, straight 25% in each?
I would still sort of say, you know, bell curve ish, but I kind of feel that this is there even
top
so.
Top end. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm obviously very happy with that.
If it said, you know, melee ranges are -4, you know, if it was like Windstorm, like -5 range, then I could kind of go, okay, because there's factions out there. There's a lot of factions out there that can just be like, okay, plus X or assault, or just walk at you and do it. But the fact that it is just, if you are in 16 stroke, you know, what's her speed? Speed 5, 8, 21.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you are in 24 inches.
You're forgetting the 1 inch from the stone as well.
Oh, sorry.
Of course we are.
Exactly. This is what I'm saying. So literally, if you are on your side of the board, she can say you don't get to shoot.
Yeah, like, I mean,
if that was only the ability, then I would be kind of still arguing that this is pretty good. But then the fact that she's also
level,
got,
yeah,
she's got a feet level push, and it's not push one model, it's push everything, and also either sight, flight, and pathfinder go away. So it's
I'm gonna say now that Legion players do not know what to do when all their beasts lose flight.
Exactly. And it's not
they just clock. Like they just
wait a minute. I actually have to deal with these terrain pieces. What?
Have you ever looked into Thexus? I'm just thinking. No Pathfinder, no either sight, and they're all pushed away.
It's pretty good.
What are your thoughts, Barry? Let's see if we can gang up on James and get into see his...
I agree with you that I think it's an A. I just think there's so much utility in there, and just like you say, no shooting is just better than like less range shooting. Just like full on no shooting, it just makes you so much safer. That I just think it's a top feat. Like I definitely think it's A level.
Quality. I'm happy with that.
Okay, so now that we've made James see sense with that one, let's go on to key spells and abilities with grade. So this one's quite key for her because it's not just the spells on her card which make her good. It is also taken into a fact that she's got Owl's Wisdom and Dark Power as well. So what did you get for this one?
It sounds like a cop-out. I'm leaning towards Toolbox again. Firstly, she uses all the spells on her card. One of the ones I use the least is Hunter's Mark, which seemed amazing. But you actually use Hunter's Mark in a strange way, where people ask you what the threat range on a model is, and you get to tell them that it's 2 inches further than it should be, and then they back off further than they need to, and then you don't cast it anyway. That happens a lot in War Machine. You tell people the maximum threat on stuff, even if you're not really gonna, do that. Yeah. Like when you play the Glacier King with her, the Glacier King frets 13 inches without rush, just on its own, because it gets one from the stone and it gets two from her. And suddenly everyone has to back off loads of distance because she's going to do stuff. She buffs the army massively, generally, but a lot of it's to do with her interaction with the stone as well. Because she makes such good use of the Cold Stone, you can increase the strength on models on infantry as well. She's spraying stuff to unjam it. She's debuffing enemy units with Cursed Fate, so the high armor stuff that you couldn't normally kill just takes a hit, takes an auto point of damage, and you can just smash single wound infantry. She's spraying stuff. Like, she's just... It's a toolbox. It's, like I said earlier...
I am in no way, it's not a cop-out in any way, because I'm reading through the categories. You've got offensive army buffs. The one that we've not really talked about, which I absolutely love, is Cursed Fate. So it's minus 2 defense, and then if you don't exceed the armor, you just do a point of damage anyway. Now that, against certain things, is just, it's just horrendous. Absolutely horrendous.
It's actually initially what made me most excited for the cast before all the Cloud War stuff and everything else. Trolls really struggle with dealing with high armor, single wound infantry.
That makes Maddox cry. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, it does.
Legion of Steel, Scar One, mini-feated Rhett guys, Dawn Guard, Sentinels. Yeah, all this stuff. All this single wound high armor infantry smashes it.
Yeah, so she's got. And
it's a defensive debuff as well, just in case they're. High defense, low armor models. Yeah. Oh, you've got to take 2 off it.
Or something. You're like suddenly down to 12. It's suddenly a lot more palatable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and then she's got dark power abilities as well to help with that offensive side to it. Making sure you actually kill the things you're after and don't have to waste as much fury doing it. She's got ball control with the cloud. She's got speed and threat progression. The only thing that she's not got, which she actually has in her feet, is the scenario side. That's it.
Yeah.
Out of all those, she has something. So yeah, she's definitely a toolbox in that way.
Yeah.
So Barry, what would you give her grade, seeing as I'm sure James has probably put it as a D?
But the spells, I there's just so much, there's so much, so many options. And they're all really good. It's not like there's one that's it's situationally good. I think they're all just really good. So yeah, I'm putting it near an A.
And what are you going for then, James? Where did you place it?
I agree. It's a toolbox.
Love it. I actually, strangely enough, I look at each individual spell and I kind of go, right, there's no A-level spell in that list. There's no Science Importance. There's no, I'm trying to think of another A-level. So I always say science and politics.
Temporal distortion, maybe?
Temporal distortion, that kind of thing. You know, TK. You know, these are the A-level spells, which on their own can literally carry a caster and can define a caster through that one spell being there. But as you said, like, literally, and I, the only one that I looked at, I went, well, that's not great, was Vanish. Like, I went, okay, but I never considered the fact that, you know, the utility with the feet, because it being a pulse, the fact that you can get up, do it, and move away. So even the one that's, you know, okay, has so much utility. I think these are all kind of like, all what I would say, you know, are good beast level spells, but the fact that literally she has five of them and two abilities and every single thing is used and every single thing is useful, then yeah, I'm definitely in the A, because it's like a sum of the parts as opposed to just one thing carrying her forward.
It's not just feats as well. Like, she'll often walk somewhere, spray stuff, and then vanish safety. She vanishes, you know, probably 50% of turns in the game. That's how good it is, because you can always just put a safer.
Oh, and also, just because no one ever talks about it, because normally it doesn't apply that much to her, but if, for example, she's all worried about the spell assassination on herself, and then you throw a... let's say she's got Glacier King and you throw Parasite on the Glacier King, she can actually just walk up to the Glacier King, stab it in the arse, and she has Dispel on her. And the important thing is it's not critical Dispel, because I hate crit effects in this game. They drive me up the wall. Don't get me started on crit knockdown. but it's actual just Dispel, which means that technically she can make two things very quickly without, you know, not having upkeeps on them and things like that. So yeah, just brilliant. Brilliant amount of spells, brilliant amount of abilities. Yeah, amazing.
Yeah.
Right, so this is an interesting one, actually. So I was of no idea where you would go with this, because every time I see the Cold Grimmer lists, and this is kind of just a like side tangent on people always say that, you know, theme lists mean that you know, everyone plays the same list. Like, every time I see Cold Grimmer, everyone's got their own take on the list and what's in it. So I was very interested to see where you landed with this. So where do you think her army focus is?
I think you're 100% right. I genuinely think you can play her. We've got four themes, and I think you can play her in every single one of those themes. She's found a national tournament success with three of the four themes already, and she's been out like 9 months. She hasn't found any much success with Creole Company, but I think it could happen just because she does so much for everything. Like, she's good with anything. She polishes any turd. Personally, I like her with infantry, because I worry that you can sometimes out, like, when people played her with a beast brick early on, you build a cloud wall to protect your beast brick, but the way that you beat beast bricks and the way that you beat cloud walls can be the same way. You outflank them.
Yeah.
So you're kind of doubling down on that kind of issue. So I really like her with infantry. I like her just with lots of stuff that just scares, that frets a long way. I mean, it's kind of a mix really. I think it's balanced again, because that's what she is. Like, you'll have beasts in there because she's so good with them, but she's so good with infantry as well.
And I think, I mean, it's one of those things where with going with the balanced, I'm in that side, is that the, you know, she can utilize so many different types of troops that it kind of feels like you said, if you go down too far down the infantry horde side, then you're going to get an army that's too big to hide with the cloud. And if you go the infantry, then you're kind of not utilizing, you know, that some of the different buffs, because they already hit hard, so therefore you is it Cursed Fates? Yeah, Cursed Fate isn't going to be as useful if you're going to kill it anyway. And then you've got things like Hunter's Mark, which is, you know, really useful. And then if you're just going infantry, you're not really getting the whole focus efficiency. So yeah, so really her kit means that literally everything you bring works well, and therefore she can bring all these options, and that just means that everything's being utilized.
Like, to give you a surprising example, a lot of people are playing with a Gargantuan at the moment, or with a Battle Engine. And both things can't be hidden behind the Cloud Wall.
Mm.
And she's so good with stuff that it doesn't matter. Yeah. Like, you go, yeah, you can shoot this, but you often use her clouds to protect key parts of the army. you like stop a couple of charges or stop, you know, one unit getting shot.
The other side to it as well, which people forget, is that when you charge a large base, you have to be able to actually charge the large base. So
yes,
she can put the Cloud Wall in front, put a unit in front of the Gargantuan, and then any guns that are going at said armor 21 Colossal, yeah, fine. If they can shoot with her feet.
yeah,
and then,
exactly.
And then when they want to charge, they can't charge the models.
Because they can't land.
Because they can't land, and they can't kill the models, they're in the way, and all this kind of stuff. So yeah, it is effectively the same as them being behind a Cloud Wall, because they can't be shot and can't be charged. And she could do that, which is, again, when you think about it, is insane.
Absolutely. We're going to get nerfed, but I hope Will doesn't listen to this.
Probably not. We're English, you see. They don't listen to us Europeans, hence the Harbinger buff. anyway, so... this is going to be a difficult one then in that case. What is her favourite theme? Now, I can only put one in, so you're going to have to pick it.
No. That's fine, because I'm going to choose to take the question as what is my current favourite theme to play her in, if that's fair with you.
You're in charge.
Yeah. I like Storm of the North. Now, if you play her in any theme, I don't think there's any wrong answer, but I like Storm of the North for a few reasons. It synergizes best with the Cold Stone, because all of your infantry is going to be immune to cold. That also means she can spray through and she can clear infantry, because you never have to worry about rolling damage on your own troops. You can just target your own and you can spray them and everything will be fine. The stone can do a different thing each turn. It can increase the speed of troops, which means that her lists get up the board very fast and she takes a lot of control of scenario. When you've got it's plus two speed, not plus... Sorry, plus one speed, not plus one movement. So on that first turn, you can get the army getting a long way up the board. Storm of the North has a lot of AD stuff, like bears. Bears can go coming on the side or they can go AD. Their speed's 7. They could, in theory, run 16 inches from the AD on the first turn if you weren't going to get charged by something, which you inevitably would. Because they'd be, 29 inches up the board at the end of the first turn. Like, she synergizes with absolutely everything. What I like about the ambushing bears, apart from if you AD them, is that they force your opponent to play narrow. And when your opponent plays narrow and you've got a cloud wall, they can't go around the sides of it, because you've got the AD stuff to kind of deter them from doing it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, there's some really cool stuff like the Glacier King, if you want to take that, will give stealth with snowfall to your troops. So your caster can have stealth as well, or you can... concealment, or you can proc prowl on the bears, so the bears can just sit in front of a Glacier King threatening huge distances and can't be shot because they've got prowl every turn and are armor 21 and threat a million miles. It's just a really good theme, and everything in the Storm of the North theme is good. Like, Long Riders are good, Champions are good, Fire Eaters are good, Bears are good, Lookouts are good, Northkin Raiders are amazing. Like, all the troops are amazing. And the theme has two of the worst theme benefits I have ever seen in my entire life. Like, I'm not kidding you. The first theme benefit is that upkeeps on Northkin models are upkept for free. She has no upkeeps. The second benefit is that you get two Snowdrifts, which aren't clouds. They work as kind of, they grant concealment to Northkin models in them, or models of immunity cold in them, and they're difficult terrain for your enemy. I've got so annoyed with them recently, I don't even put them on the table. That's how bad a benefit they are. And yet, the stuff in the theme is so good, it doesn't matter that you're taking under a theme where nothing is, like none of the benefits are worth taking.
Well, go on then. Let us know your list then. So we're obviously telling people not to play it, but if they somehow go against us and decide to play, what is the list that you would take?
I mean, at the moment, I really like the list with Colgrimmar, a Rune Bearer. We talked earlier about the 16-inch control area. We talked about giving her extra fury for spells. Yes, please. I've got a Mountain King. We talked about huge bases. I like the combination of sprays. You can't actually shield guard any of her sprays or the Mountain King sprays, so often your list that thinks it's safe isn't. The Mountain King also brings huge amounts of control with Deafen on the spray, which is really nice. I've got a Pyre Troll, which you'll see the use of later on. I've got a Fellcaller Hero. I've got a Bogtrog Mistspeaker in case my opponent dares to bring its own clouds. Not allowed. Also, it helps to add magical attacks to the list because you've got a full max stone plus Northkin Elder, so you can struggle with magical attacks. Although you've got a Mistspeaker to hand out guidance and you've got Cold Grimmer Sprays. I've watched her spray to death a Wraith Engine on her own. So
I say ouch to facing her, but I wish I was there. That's all I'm going to say.
I've got min unit of Northkin Raiders because they take up lots of board space. They get fast up the board. They're really, really good against Cursed Fate units. You charge them in, they kill a model automatically as long as they hit, and then they get to use Quick Work and throw a bomb, which if it hits will kill another model. It's amazing. Like, six of them can kill, you know, 10 infantry, easy. I've got two units of bears because I want to keep my opponents narrow. They also hit hard. You want something hard hitting in the list. And I've got Fire Eaters. And Fire Eaters' biggest concern on any board, like, the only weakness Fire Eaters have, apart from when they burn to death, is getting shot off the board. They are terrible against gun lines. So you've got both a cloud wall and you've got a feat that protects them. They are godly with her. And that's my list.
Very nice. And if so, someone goes out there tomorrow, buys themselves this list, puts it all together, they throw it on the board, and what's the first tip that you would give them to get that list going?
It would be not to have preconceived ideas about what she's going to do each turn. I feel that a lot of people, I've spoken online to a lot of people that think that she's a cloud wall caster, and they've played her and that they go, someone from America told me that she almost never uses a spray. Chain Attack told us that her spray wasn't very good because they think she's a cloud wall caster. She is not. She can do whatever you need to do at that time. Be flexible and let her be the superstar she is, and don't forget Al's wisdom, because that got me killed loads when I forgot to cast it on myself.
Fair enough. Okay, so last two categories. So I'll let Barry. Barry's been a bit quiet in the background there. So Barry, where do you feel that I already know where I'm going with this, but where do you feel that she sits within the troll faction?
It's probably faction defining, and if not, it's like right at the top of first team. She's just got that many like good abilities and just like that many tools that I just think she is like that. She's just really good in trolls, one of the top level.
It took me back to a conversation we had ages ago to do with like what is it that she does that other trolls don't do, and I think there's so much stuff
when
she does that other trolls just don't do.
Everyone's gonna think I'm really down on her, and you've heard me wax lyrical. You can see how much I love her as a caster. The only argument I've got for first team is that so many people are playing different casters without her at the moment. Like, so many top tier people are running Grim 1 and Borka 2, or Madrak and Borka 2, or, you know, Doomy 2 and Grim 2. There's so many good casters in Trolls right now. And while she's one of the best, it's not weird if someone said to me, oh, if someone tells me that Tim Bankey's just won the Sioux, not playing Cold Grimmer, because he did that and he wasn't playing her. Yeah. And you know what I mean? Like it's not like she's Hayley Free. It's not like she's Harbinger. It's not shocking when people win tournaments when they're not playing her. It's not like the Dreamer. Like, if you heard someone had won a con with Grimkin and they weren't playing Dreamer, you'd be like, what? Someone tells you they've won a con playing Trolls and they're not playing Cold Grimmer, you're like, you know, fair enough.
There are other options in Trolls.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think that's the kind of like we're saying, is that there's so many other good options in Trolls. I think if there wasn't, you know, Borka, I love that fact that we're saying if there wasn't Borka 2, I've got to say, I just love that. But anyway, if there wasn't Borka 2 and, you know, Grim 1 and like you said, and Madrak 1 with his changes, and there's probably other Trolls as well that people are playing. Yeah, she is definitely there, but I think, yeah, like you said, she's the first, well, she's amongst many, you know, there's a definite cut above some of the other casters, but she is, like you said, there's like a good selection that you can pick from now, which I suppose would be your first team. So as much as she does scare me a lot when you see her across the table, I will admit, you know, the fact that you wouldn't see her in a pairing isn't surprising, you know, whereas if I didn't see Haley 3 in a pairing or Harby in a pairing, then I do get shocked. Whereas with her, yeah, definitely you would see other casters instead. I don't know why. I can only imagine that all you know troll players are addicted to meth, so but yeah, no, I get what you mean. So yeah, we'll track that as first team for you. So okay, and then the final category is floor and ceiling. What would you say her floor is?
I don't know. I found, like, when I first started playing, I played as a Beast Brick, and I got smashed at one of your local tournaments by Ben. That first UKIS qualifier where I was really sad and I went away and I was like, oh, I'm going to go and try something else out. It didn't work because he saw through my clouds and it made me really sad. So the first time I played her, I got smashed and I hated her and I dropped her for like a month. But like, she's got so much innate power that there's obvious strength there and you'll obviously have some kind of early success. But she's also got a lot of tricks and stuff. But I don't think... Everyone always says, do you learn something after 50 games? And I'm not sure I learn anything after 50 games on a caster. I think by about 20, 25, you're probably where I need to be. So, I mean, I would say that she's probably got a medium floor, and I'd say she's got a medium ceiling. But I don't know. You can change our mind.
Okay. Do you want to go, Barry? Or?
Yeah. I would have put the floor at medium for sure, because I don't think she's like... She's not walking at ground level and be really strong already. I think you've got to do a lot of thinking and a lot of working to get her actually doing what she does. Like you were saying, like the people were all really down on her when she came out, and they were all like, "Oh, the sprays are rubbish and stuff," and they're not. But I think it takes a little work to see that. So I think she's definitely got a medium floor. It's difficult to put like the ceiling, It's medium, maybe high. So I think she's just got a lot of like she's got so many tools that I don't think, I think there's like, because there's always an option. I think finding the best option means you've got to do a lot of work to like, you've got to have a lot of practice with her to find out what the best options are. So I'd be tempted to put the ceiling more towards high.
Yeah, I mean, okay. my review was medium, as I said, which is just, you know, you give Maddox to someone, they're there. You give this to someone, you know, they'll get to the end of the game and go, oh crap, she's got that other spell, maybe that would have been useful, or I forgot to use owl or some dog power or something else. You know, there's a lot going on. So yeah, definitely medium there. I mean, I did originally think high, but I think she doesn't have the on the table issues that some of the high casters have, like for example, Haley 3 we always say is a high floor, because not only do you have to organize everything that's going on, but you also have to organize this complicated force at the same time. So she's not, you know, she's not as complicated as that, but she still has, you know, where you're going to put your troops so that you don't, you know, they're behind the cloud wall, or you know, where is the owl going, that kind of thing.
She's also quite forgiving, like you can make mistakes and like lose a key piece on attrition and then just go and assassinate the caster.
Yeah,
like there's a forgiving aspect to how she plays, and a cloud wall just naturally is forgiving, because you know what I mean, like 25% of the people you play against are just going to quit to pieces because they can't deal with it.
In regards to the ceiling, I was again like Barry a bit kind of between, but one of the things that actually has tipped me to high was one of the things that you said, James, was that three out of the four troll themes she can play in, and also she's really good with, you know, so many different things that I think to really get the full, you know, to be a Colgrimmar master, if you like, would take so many, like you said, you know, after 25 games with a list, you're not learning anymore. But the problem being is there's three separate themes that she's good in, possibly even four, and then there's the slight different makeups of each of those lists.
Yep.
So, you know, you're talking even just to get, you know, just one caster to get a reasonable amount, 25 games with each list, that is 100 games, variations, 200 games, you know, to get that, to get the most power and to be that Colgrimmer, you know, get the full power out of it, which is, you know, as we've said, is a lot. You know, there's a lot to get to know, so that's why I probably say her ceiling's quite high to get, you know, to be really be a master of her. But so we've got kind of one medium, we've also medium for floor, ceiling, we've had a medium to high, and a high. So seeing
you've convinced me. I'm happy with you, what you said. Like, I wasn't sure.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. So we'll put it down as medium and high. Right then, guys. Well, thank you very much. There's two more casters to go into the table. So as I said, guys, thank you very much for getting this far with us. We always just love to ramble on about our favorite casters. And if you want to see the details of what we've recorded, it'll be on the website and all the previous casters as well. If you want to, guys, obviously I always say, if you know, you got to listen to get the list, but if you guys want to post your lists up on the Facebook post when we put it up there, feel free. And then if you guys it's up to you, but if you guys want to, you know, let people know any sort of Twitter handles or anything, if they want to have a chat about the casters or they're interested in Maddox or Colgrimmer and they want to ask any more questions, I'll hand it over to you. If you guys just want to give it any promotions or any clubs or anything, just feel free. So I'll throw it over to Barry first.
Yeah, I do have a Twitter handle. I never use it. But if you're interested in talking about Maddox, I am happy to talk about Maddox if you just drop me a message on Facebook. I don't think we've got the club. I should probably show the club. we've got a big 48 man event going on in October. That's the Parfis Winter Cup. Just gonna like plug that because I might as well.
And that's in the UK, just to let people know.
Yeah, that's here in the UK. But yeah, other than that, no. Just drop me a message on Facebook if you want to chat Maddox. I do enjoy it.
Good stuff. And James?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, contact me the usual ways. I'm on Facebook. But also, if you want to discuss trolls, there's a fantastic forum on Lormahoods where all the troll players gather and we share some scary tech and we talk about stuff. And it's a really good place, and we're trying to build a bit of a troll community there, and it's pretty strong. There's some good minds there. We even have like the Americans as well coming over. We've got some good European players, so it's a good place to hang out if you want to talk troll dojo.
Good stuff. Well, thank you very much for your time, guys, and thank you very much you guys out there. I know we've been had a bit of a break, but unfortunately life, it gets in the way. And we'll hopefully have a lot, and also I may have lost my list that I had all the people and the agreements they'd signed up to and casters, so I will try and get back on track with that, guys. So let me know if there's any particular casters you want reviewed, and give us some feedback on the cast if you still find it enjoyable, if you like the ranking system we use. All feedback is welcome, positive and negative, and hopefully speak to you next time. So goodbye from me.
Bye from me.
And bye from me.